Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight got bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degrees from the University of Michigan by age 23. He was the president and COO of Gateway Inc. and the founder of Avalon Investments Inc. He's the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Ardesta LLC, which specializes in small technology products. Ardesta's mantra is smaller, faster, better, cheaper. And he's also the chairman of Spark. His name, Rick Snyder, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760. WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Rick Snyder, the chairman, CEO, and co-founder of Ardesta. Rick, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. I'm happy to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. I'm happy to. My parents were the key to who I am today. In many respects, I think I had some of the greatest parents anyone could ever ask for. In terms of a couple things they gave me that I always try to highlight to people that I'm really proud of, is one, they always gave me love, regardless when I did something good and when I did something not so good. The other thing, most importantly, they gave me was the ability to make a decision. And that's one of the things I'm trying to learn to go with my kids. And that's a lot different than telling kids what to do. Basically, they tried to teach me a framework of how I should make decisions because they knew they wouldn't always be there for me. And that's something very important is as you grow up and you get more independence, you have to make those calls yourself. And so they sort of set a framework to say, son, you got to figure these things out on your own. And they would be there to answer questions, support me. But I had to make those calls myself, starting at a fairly early age.
What did they do when you made the wrong decision?
They said, we love you and you can make better decisions. I mean, that's part of it, is knowing you have that support even when you make a mistake. And you will. I mean, that's part of life. If you don't make mistakes, you're not learning.
What did your dad do?
He owned a window cleaning business in Battle Creek. He was a good small business person. And Mom stayed at home and did a great job, hopefully, of raising me. But that was the environment back in those days. We had a small house in Battle Creek and grew up on the numbered streets.
You had a sister who was 20 years older than you. Your mom was 45 when she had you. What would you say to parents today who are having children later?
I thought it was great, largely. I mean, if you think about it, and I think about who I am today versus who I was when I was 25 or so, if nothing else, hopefully you have your act better together to be a better parent in terms of being more mature, having seen the world, and probably having a lot less of the stresses you might have in terms of hopefully being more financially secure, having a better grip on the issues of life. About the only thing I found I really sacrificed in some ways is I kind of use an excuse occasionally. I'm not very good at sports because I didn't have a lot of people to go play catch with.
You started reading Business Week and Fortune magazine at age 10. That's not the typical kid. Why'd you do that?
I love to learn. I love to learn about virtually anything. But if you think about it, business is really the core to our economy. If you want to build a great career or anything else and you have the opportunity to learn those skills, it's a good thing. And I actually found it exciting and interesting, even at that age. I mean, one of the things I did in addition to that is, and this was a case of my parents making me make decisions or letting me, is they actually cashed in the endowment policy they had set up for me for college when I was like 11. For only like $1,200, and they let me go play the stock market. My father took me down and introduced me to his broker, and he had pre-staged this with the broker, where the broker actually, we had a deal where my father wouldn't get involved unless I asked his opinion. So basically, I had a broker I'd be calling up on the phone and asking him questions, and this guy was great. He treated me like any other client, and that taught me a lot about business, but I also made some pretty good stock market choices.
Did you buy Microsoft early on?
Microsoft wasn't even in business, I don't think, when I first got going in terms of being a public company. Actually, the first stock I bought, and you can guess it, I'm from Battle Creek, so I bought Kellogg's.
When you're young and you're different, you need courage, you need confidence to get through that. What would you say to young listeners who want to be different?
Don't limit yourself. Actually, think about the long term and the importance of doing these things. Because it's interesting, if you think about the things I had skills in, business, all these different things, I was able to build a great career and provide a lot of things that people always talk about they want to do. But again, most kids limit themselves too much rather than opening up their mind and saying, let's be different. Let's learn about different things in this world and let's go after those challenges.
By the time, Rick, you're 23, you have a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, and a doctorate degree from U of M. How old were you when you started college?
Well, that's a great story, Jack. Actually, I wanted to start college when I was 14. And I went to my mother and said, can I start taking classes at community college? Because I found this little paragraph about going to Kellogg Community College. And she actually told me no when I first went to her. And she said the reason is because I'd have to drive myself to school. So I went back a year later when I was 15 and I was getting close to getting my driver's license and said, Mom, can I take Introduction to Business now? And she said, yes. So I started taking community college classes while I was still a junior in high school. I took 9 credit hours the first year, and then I was going full-time to community college while I was the first part of my senior year in high school. And then the wildest thing happened is I just went up to the University of Michigan to see how they'd transfer, met a great guy, and he said, just come to school. So I just took overloads and went year-round and built a path because I knew I wanted all 3 degrees. And my focus wasn't to spend 9 years in school. I wanted to get out there and engage in the commercial world. So I actually built a plan to do it in 6 years. I consciously structured it to get done in 6 years.
Wow. 1991, you go and you join Gateway, and then ultimately become the president and CEO. What did Gateway do?
Well, Gateway, first of all, is one of the revolutionary companies in terms of changing how people bought PCs. We were one of the leaders in direct personal computers, and I think we did a great job of building that. And hopefully we're continuing to do some great things in the marketplace. But at that point in time, we were a rocket taking off as a company. Basically, when I started with the company, we were doing about $500 million in revenue, about $600 million in revenue, and about 700 people. And 6 years later, we had $6 billion in revenue and 11,000 people. And basically, I worked for the founder the whole time. My job was basically run the company while he worked on strategy and the long-term things.
We're talking to Rick Snyder. When we come back, we'll ask him how he built the thing from $500 million to $6 billion in 6 years. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Rick Snyder. Rick, you become the president of Gateway, and the thing grows from $500 million to $6 billion. How did you ever do it?
Good teamwork is the key, and a real focus on 2 things. One, what was our strategy? And our strategy was to deliver outstanding customer satisfaction to people and innovative products. So we had a clear focus on doing those 2 things, and then we executed it really well over and over again. A lot of times people like to get caught up on just what's the strategy, which is key, and we kept it very simple. One of the success points there is to have a simple, clear strategy that people can follow, and you can get thousands of people to understand very easily. The second piece of it, though, that people often underestimate is execution. Don't get cute. Don't vary too many different ways. Stay focused on what your strategy is and just do it great, day in, day out.
You're very successful. The thing is like a rocket going forward. And in 1997, you come back to Michigan. Why?
It's time to come home. If you looked at the Gateway experience was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, just fabulous. But a couple things were going on. One is we'd gotten up to 6 billion and 11,000 people, and it would become a large company. And I love building things. And it was more in the mode of let's become a large company. The second thing is it was clear looking at the longer term, the company was talking about moving its headquarters to California. I'm a Midwesterner, my family is, my wife is, and we thought it'd be great to come back home. So basically, we packed up and moved back to Michigan. And then the interesting part of that is I come back to Michigan, and you can tell from my personality profile, I have to be doing something. I'm not good at slowing down. So if you looked at it and you looked at the state of Michigan, there really weren't any regular jobs for me. I'm not the traditional big corporate kind of person. So I'm back, and it's the choices were try to look for a big company job that doesn't fit or stay at home and probably have my wife kill me because I would drive her nuts. So it basically came down to let's be innovative. And so the concept was, is can I help teach some of the skill sets that I've learned at Gateway and prior to that to entrepreneurs in this state and to help build organizations that could be successful? So I started a venture capital fund called Avalon Investments.
What did it do?
We were a generalist venture capital fund. I raised $100 million worth of capital to basically do investments in the Midwest. We later expanded somewhat, but our original goal was to primarily invest in the Midwest and do technology transfer from universities and such, and that's why I ended up in Ann Arbor.
You've stated on numerous occasions that you believe there's five drivers to build an economy in the state. Can you talk about those five drivers?
Yeah, if you want to build an innovation-based economy, there are five key environmental factors you need to have. First of all, you need the people, and that's probably the most important of that group. The second one is technology or innovation skills. The third one is capital. The fourth one is infrastructure in terms of having the right environment of bankers, lawyers, accountants, all those kind of supporting people. And the last one, it was interesting. I added this one after I came back. I came back with the first four. After I started working here, I added culture. And I would put people and culture as the two biggest challenges and drivers to building an innovation-based economy.
We do a very good job of graduating young talent from these universities in the state, but we lose far too many of them to Chicago, et cetera, et cetera. What do we have to do to keep that young talent?
A couple things, and it goes back to those two points. First of all, our culture, we need to change it. We have a culture of maintaining things. We were extremely successful in the earlier parts of the last century to the point where we built these huge organizations, and people largely got in the place to say, how do I keep this working okay on my watch, rather than reinventing and rebuilding it and getting innovative to look at what's really needed in the marketplace. So that's part of the first thing. The second thing is, goes to your point, Jack, is I think there's some great things we can do to improve our educational system, but if we do those alone, we're still in trouble because that's the people side. We need to look for the entrepreneurial types that are the senior level people, the C blank O kind of people, the executives that are going to be the company builders, because these are the mentors for the young people. These are the people that are going to build the companies that are going to keep the young people here. Simply improving our ed system is just really going to help everyone else in the world. We need to have our core group here of entrepreneurs and C blank O people that are the executives of our next generation of great companies.
You mentioned that we have to change the state culture from one of maintaining, keeping the legacy. How do we do that, Rick?
We have to talk about it a lot. A lot of it is getting out on the table so people can openly do this. Because one of the challenges of getting people to be innovative or entrepreneurial is they have to face the fact they may fail. Because if you're taking enough risk to really build something exciting, something different, there is a measurable amount of opportunity for you to fail at that. And our culture really doesn't support people in failure very well. Again, you don't go out to fail. I've never invested or gotten involved in a company that I thought wouldn't be a great success. I've got some companies that I've invested in that have been great successes, but to be blunt, I've also invested in some companies that we've had to close down. And that's a terrible experience. But yet, if you're going to build those big successes, you have to be able to say there are cases that just aren't going to work.
How many times have you failed?
That's a good question. It depends on who you ask, probably. But in terms of companies we've shut down, where I've been directly involved in that whole process, there's a handful of those. And the key thing there is when you have that failure, is you do it with the right way. You respect people. You work with people closely because you're talking about people's lives and their livelihood and their families. So you learn how to work with people closely. But to be blunt, I always hate those things. It's an awful experience. But then again, I'm willing to go out and try to build another set of companies because I think it's worth it to all of us to take that opportunity. And the interesting part is if you find the right people, the people in those companies want to try again.
If you could give one piece of advice to our leaders in Lansing, what would it be?
It's hard to get one piece of advice. I'll give you a couple. One is don't limit ourselves. Again, this is what I say to everyone. The greatest limitation a person has or an organization has is what they place in their own mind. We limit ourselves more than anything else. And the other piece of advice I would give the state in particular is discussing something, trying to maintain the status quo, is making a decision. It's a decision not to move ahead and to stay in the past. And we have to get out of that mold. We have to get into an action-based decision model. We need to take risks where basically I view it instead of you plan forever and theoretically come up with a decision until the facts have changed, and then when you implement, you're behind the times, is I think you really have to plan, act, adjust, and attack.
What would you say to a listener who's 45 years old, has just accepted a big buyout, and has said, I've never had to make a decision in my life? How do I learn to make a decision?
A couple things. One is, a lot of it is looking at yourself. A big part of this is going through and asking yourself the question, what am I equipped to do? What am I willing to do? Can I roll up my sleeves? Can I go make copies in a company if you're not used to doing that? Can you do whatever job needs to be done if you want to be entrepreneurial? And you have to ask yourself all those tough questions and see if it really fits or not. Because some people are good entrepreneurs and other people really aren't suited for that and shouldn't go down that path. A lot of it is finding the right mix. And one of the things we need to do is I think we need to come up with better counseling and training programs for those people. That's one thing I'm advocating very loudly to the state and to the local level, is let's create an experienced worker program where basically we can provide those counseling services. Short of that, the other thing I would really recommend, if you're in that spot today, is to look around to see, do you see a role model or a mentor that could really help you? Someone that you admire, that's built a business, that's done something that you would really like to look at doing. And again, can you go talk to that person? Try contacting them. See if they're willing to talk to you. See if they can point you in the right direction. Because the best way to grow in a lot of these ways is mentorship.
We're talking to Rick Snyder, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Rick Snyder. Rick, you're the chairman, CEO, and co-founder of Ardesta LLC. What is Ardesta LLC?
Ardesta, we were actually originally a business accelerator for small technology. And small technology includes micro, nanotechnology, other very small technologies. If you look at the future and you look at big trends in terms of kind of the ages of the last two or three centuries, we had the industrial age. That was followed by the information age or the communication age. The next stage coming out of that is small technology in some fashion, looking at micro and nanotechnology. If you think about it, and it's not creating brand new things in many respects, but it's going to that phrase you first mentioned in the intro, it's smaller, faster, better, cheaper. How can you fundamentally change the metric of how we do things today in a fashion that's so much more efficient? And I can give you a couple real examples. If you look at one of the companies we have, is called HandyLab. It's a company in Ann Arbor. It's doing a new way to do in vitro diagnostic tests for people. Currently, one of the tests they're working on is for group B strep for pregnant women. The current way it's traditionally done is to grow a culture. And this has to be done many weeks before the woman has the baby. It takes days to grow the culture, and you get an answer back. And they may treat the woman or may not based on that answer. But then there's intervening weeks where that woman's still at risk. The test we're working on is a test where essentially you can get an answer back in about 20, 30 minutes. That could literally be done while the woman's in labor. And if you think about the value of that in terms of smaller, faster, better, cheaper, it has those attributes just to revolutionize that particular one issue. And it can be used for many other dimensions, but that's just the starting point.
One other example, please.
Sure. Another one we're working on is a replacement for the quartz crystal. If you think about technology and all the innovations in cell phones and consumer electronics, there's still the old quartz crystal. Everything else has gone to silicon. And one of the things that still keep them larger is this old quartz crystal. One of our companies is actually based building a silicon-based substitute that's smaller, faster, better, cheaper than a quartz crystal. So ultimately, you'll get down to the one-chip cell phone kind of device in the long term. So instead of even have that big thing by the ear, you may put it in your eyeglasses, in the very end of your eyeglasses.
We're talking to Rick Snyder, and I'm Jack Rasula. and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Rick Snyder. Rick, Ardesta has raised over $100 million. Where do you go and get $100 million?
Well, you don't go to your normal ATM, that's for sure. It is a challenge. A lot of it is going out to work with high net worth families, institutional investors, all that. And in this environment, it's not a simple thing. It takes a lot of experience and background. And to be blunt, I'm pleased with the success we've had because we're not in one of the major money centers to go do that. One thing I would hope over time we could do is encourage more institutions that are Michigan-based to look at investing in organizations such as ourselves and other ones, because it'd be great if we had more involvement in our own backyard and the funds we've created.
What does Ardesta look for in the firms that it buys into?
Well, I would go back, and we talked about Gateway earlier, a couple things. One is a simple strategy, something simple and clear that creates a compelling customer proposition, not a cool technology. Too often people think you invest in a company because it's a great technology. Great technologies don't make profitable businesses. Compelling customer propositions do. The second key element is how do you get great execution? Because again, you need to do this day in and day out for years, and you're going to run into problems that you never expected. So the key there is a great management team. So if you think about what's that compelling proposition and what's the great team you either have to build or invest in. And we've done both. We've started companies from scratch with literally a license from the university and build them up from there.
You've said that you principally identify Midwest-based firms. Most people would think you want to go to the coast to find these entrepreneur firms. Why do you focus on the Midwest firms?
Largely because I want to help people. I mean, part of it is actually building a culture and an environment here. Again, that's why we came back home, was to see if we can help make a positive difference and changing the environment here in a constructive way. My life would actually be much easier if I was in Silicon Valley or Boston or one of those places in terms of raising money and investing funds. But that's not what it's all about. It's not just, is it simple? I think there's a better way and a right way, and that's to go help people in this environment.
You've stated that your personal mantra is help people, have fun, make money. Can you talk about that?
Sure. It's that simple vision thing. If you want to sum me up where I am in life today, that covers it pretty well. If you look at the help people, that's reflected by wanting to do these investments and this work in this environment, Michigan and the Midwest. Have fun. I think it's critical. If you want to be successful, you need to enjoy what you're doing. And make money, where I'm at is I have a private enterprise. And if you don't have make money as one of your goals in a private enterprise, you're nuts. And anyone would be nuts to invest in me. What I would say over the next 5 or 10 years is I actually hope to drop the make money thing and actually look at the ways to do public service more than the private enterprise thing. But that's in the next 5 to 10 years.
Have you shared that goal with your wife?
Yes, she's on board with that. Right. She actually knows that. I've actually been consistent. Just like I told you about my college plan, I actually had a plan for 3 careers from the time I've been a teenager.
You're around entrepreneurs every day. What is an entrepreneur?
An entrepreneur is someone who really wants to build something innovative and isn't afraid of failing, and can put together a group of people to succeed at a common goal and have fun doing it.
One thing I've learned in building businesses over 30 years is the entrepreneur has a dream. Without great people around that entrepreneur, all it ever is a dream. You have to get great people of the same culture who are great at what you want them to do, and they're the ones that turn the dream into the reality. Most entrepreneurs say, well, I can't get great people till I get successful. They never get successful. How does an entrepreneur attract great people early on?
A lot of it is if you have that dream, if you have that vision, that strategy, people will buy into that. They will share that. The other one is the culture you create in the organization. Is it a fun one? Fundamentally, does that help? Usually, quite often, young, aggressive person get excited about it. And the second one is how do you manage them, the boundaries you put on them? Because one of the things you'll find about entrepreneurial companies that don't work are the ones that tend to get too autocratic in the long term. or the command and control thing, because it can work good in the very early days, but if you want the best people, you're going to need to let them run. And that goes back to the gateway model. When you asked me about how I helped run that company, my view of it was, as we became larger and larger, my role was to keep us out of bureaucracy on one hand and chaos on the other hand, and how to move us up into the right and let people run within the reasonable range.
If you were to teach a class, a seminar, to fledgling entrepreneurs, what two or three main points would you try to get across to them?
Some of the same things we've covered, that clear, concise, compelling vision, great execution, and when it comes to the team part, the one I would add is go try to hire people a lot smarter than you are. That's always one of the keys to success. Too often people try to think they have to be the smartest person. The people that really succeed are the ones that get smarter people working for them.
If somebody's 40 or 50 years old and thinks that he or she is an entrepreneur inside, can they still do it?
Sure. The classic illustration is Henry Ford. Henry Ford was in his 40s and failed 3 times. It was the third Ford Motor Company that finally took off. Actually, that's one of my great role models, to say, hey, I'm in my 40s. I've been entrepreneurial for quite a few years, but I'm going to keep cranking for another couple decades being entrepreneurial.
You say that it's okay to make mistakes, but you don't want to be making the same mistakes over and over and over. Do you find that as you get more successful, the mistakes just have more zeros behind them?
What you find is one of the main things about being successful is never getting to the point of believing you're not going to make mistakes. Only an idiot believes they're never going to make a mistake. And that's when you get in real trouble, is when you get that arrogance and too cocky to say, I know it all and I can do it all. You always have to be cognizant of the fact that if you're challenging things, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to learn. The question is measured risk, is understanding the consequences of the mistakes you make, catching them early enough, admitting them, and fixing them. Quite often, if you looked at life and where you got in trouble, and I'll put this out for anyone in their life, is it's a mistake that you didn't acknowledge quickly enough and really get on top of and fix. Because most of the things we run into, the bad things that go on, is if you face up to reality, you acknowledge them, and you fix them quickly, you're okay. If you don't, those are the ones that are going to come back and really bite you.
Amen, amen, amen. at Gateway, you were a dad. You ran the organization. You were the father. At Ardesta, you're an uncle. How have you made the adjustment, Rick?
It's a challenge. I would say I still have days that it's a challenge because there's a difference between essentially having the authority to go do things versus having to kind of be an advisor. One thing that's really helped me, a couple things. One is, even when I had, quote unquote, the dad, the authority to do things, the best way to get an answer was not to tell people. That was a last resort. Good management is basically creating an environment, asking questions, so the people working for you get the right answer on their own, or actually present their case and you let them take that measured risk. So it's not as dissimilar as it sounds, but there are times where it's a challenge. The other thing is, I viewed being the uncle is I can help a lot more groups. It actually allows me, rather than just having one organization I'm managing, is hopefully I can be involved in multiple organizations and all watch them flourish with hopefully some good advice and sometimes some goofy things from me.
Are you a rich uncle? We're talking to Rick Snyder, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Rick Snyder, who's the chairman of Spark, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Rick, one thing that I see happening in this state as part of this transformation is private equity firms coming in here. Recently, Carl Icahn bought Lear. As I read about the various scenarios of Chrysler being sold, to me, the likeliest scenario, if it is sold, is that it would be sold to a private equity company. The current issue of Fortune magazine has a fella, Steve Schwarzman, on the cover. He's the CEO of Blackstone Group, a major private equity firm. And the key article in Fortune talks about the fact that a few of these combined have $125 $1 billion to invest in companies. How's that going to change this state?
I think we're going to have to watch how that evolves, Jack, and it's a lot more than a state question. This is actually a national question and ultimately a worldwide question. There's pros and cons to it. I don't think it's a simple question. On the positive side, one of the reasons you're seeing the private equity people come in and be able to have the success that they do, and some, if you look at the track record of some of the companies that have been privately held, is they're able to look at the long term. In some ways, our culture today nationally is too focused on what's the next quarter's results if you're a public company, and there's not enough thought process to say what's out there 2 years, 5 years, 10 years in terms of building a good company, and it's far too short-term focused. And we need to work on that in terms of a national issue. And so that's one of the positives, that private equity actually brings that longer-term horizon. On the other hand, things to keep in mind that you need to look out for is, one, they'll restructure companies. Quite often they'll need some restructuring, but you have to be careful they don't put too much debt load on the companies. That's one of the concerns with the kind of the fervor going on, that you could find them over-leveraged and then ultimately end up in bankruptcy if they run into trouble, and that would be a bad thing. And they can also draw out too much money in terms of fees and other costs. But I would say that's still the minority of those firms. The majority of the firms I've seen and how they operate actually probably are bringing more positive than negative in terms of a better, stronger, long-term focus on the business. But it's something to be aware of. As this gets overheated, I think you could find this problem with too much debt, too many fees being taken out, and too many problems.
Looking into your Fortune Globe, what changes will they bring about? What demands will they bring on the workers, et cetera?
Well, I think they can bring positive ones in many respects. Again, if you're looking out the longer term, is hopefully they're going to start doing more research, build more innovative products in the longer term in terms of building through those things. And those can be positive ones, again, if the private equity firm has a longer term horizon. If they don't, you could find the flippers, which are sort of the people that just sort of restructure. Those can be terribly hard on people, where basically you're letting people go, you're driving them for short-term results so they can simply find a way to exit the company too quickly. So again, I don't think there's one flavor. It's more as this market gets overheated, I think you're going to find the percentage of kind of good to negative potentially going more to the negative.
A.K.A. Kirkorian.
Again, any one of these probably has done some positive deals, and then there's some negative ones.
All right, let's change subjects. Spark. What is Spark?
Spark is the Economic Development Organization for the Greater Washtenaw County area, which I'm very proud to be part of. It's a real great opportunity in the sense that Washtenaw County has some of the greatest innovators and opportunities for the state over the long term. And in large part, the history there is we probably underinvested and underfunded in economic development. Never really needed to. The economy just ran so well there with the universities, the other educational institutions, and some other players, that things just worked well. And I think as the environment's changed, I think the community's done a good job of recognizing the need to be more proactive, to be more collaborative in terms of working together. And that's what Spark's all about, to be that spark.
About a month or so ago, we got a bombshell. Pfizer announced they're pulling up their roots from Ann Arbor, losing 2,500 to 3,500 jobs if you count contractors. I think that was on a Thursday or Friday, that announcement. And Spark and Governor Granholm convened a meeting on Monday or Tuesday to address that. What was discussed and what was decided?
Well, there's a lot of things going on, but the real focus of what took place there was to say, let's get the community together to see how we can, first of all, support those employees, those workers. Because that's a personal issue for a lot of people and their families, and how we can support them in a constructive way. Secondly, how can you take care of a large site, a large either albatross or opportunity, and hopefully an opportunity in terms of essentially an area as large as downtown Ann Arbor, if you looked at how much Pfizer owns. And beyond that is, what's the impact on all the community, the social service organizations that Pfizer was a key contributor to? There's a whole litany of different things that go all the list from, first of all, the people, the site, the community organizations, what's the right long-term policy and how to work through these things. And I think we're doing a good job of responding. It's going to be an iterative process, but we're making good progress.
Are you hopeful about the future of Michigan?
Sure, I wouldn't be here. I'm excited about the future. I view us as going through kind of the next revolution of getting people to recalibrate their thinking. The best illustration I give to people is the old story about what was the entrepreneurial center of the world in the last century. Most people would say Silicon Valley. I argue it was Detroit. If you go back to the 1910s and 20s, our problem was we had two generations of world success. First of all, we had the technology innovators who built these great organizations, Ford, GM, Chrysler, those places. And then we had the management geniuses come in next, the Alfred Sloans and people like that that managed them. Our problem is they became so successful, then we got in the mode of saying, how do we protect these things? How do we just keep them going without taking risk? And again, we were looking at ourselves and being complacent about ourselves rather than looking at the outside world and say the world is changing faster and faster. And we need to look at what is that compelling proposition to the outside world, not what we think is kind of cool.
What you had talked to earlier about maintain. A lot of articles have been written about Rick Snyder. And one of the common traits that they refer to you as is you're a natural leader. Rick, what makes a great leader?
Well, thanks. I view it as really a combination of things. Again, it's the ability to look out and have some vision that you can get excited about. And in some ways, I've planned a lot of these things for many years that I'm working on today. So I've had a clear vision, and I've tried to execute well to it. The other part is to be a good mentor and role model for others. If you really want to succeed, it's not what you've accomplished. It's really how you've passed those on to other people. That's the third career I hope to have after public service is to go back to teaching. I did some teaching right out of school just so I could go do that, because the question is not what I've accomplished, but have I created an environment to allow lots of other people to flourish and to do things they otherwise wouldn't have done? If I can do that, then I believe I've succeeded, not in terms of what I've done in my own right, but what all these other people have done.
You've always wanted to learn, and you continue to want to learn. What's been that key to keep that up?
That's just a natural inquisitiveness. Every day I'm looking for something to learn. That's my question every day at the dinner table to my kids. What did they learn today?
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I would tell them a couple things. One is one of the early things I said is the greatest limitation a person tends to have is their own mind. Don't limit yourself. Don't get yourself in a box. Dream. What would really get you excited that you could do, have a great career, and you could help change the world? The second piece of it that I don't think is emphasized enough is it's hard work. And you've really got to be dedicated, and you've got to be thinking about, I'm investing for the future. I'm not just living for today. Too often we get right in front of us and just say, did we have a good day? Well, think about, are you building something that says, I need to invest, I need to study those extra hours, I need to work that extra job, because in 2 or 3 years, it will really pay off. We're much like the capital markets. We need to get back to looking at a longer-term horizon of building our careers.
Rick Snyder, as we look back in this transformation and how we achieved it, the history books will tell us that one of the people that played a major role was Rick Snyder. So thanks for what you've done, and please keep it up. Our guest next Sunday will be Steve Largent. He was a Football Hall of Famer, and then he became a U.S. Congressman from Oklahoma. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahome.